You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it has to get done, regardless of the weather, get it done. But if you can stay in and chill, do that too. Because it is hot out there, man. And I feel for our brothers and sisters in the Caribbean. And I really do, and I know you do too. Man. You know. And this is kind of like a new normal, family. You know, we're going to be having these kinds of weather situations, unfortunately, for years to come. Much stronger hurricanes and tornadoes and longer times. Weather extremes is what you need to call it. That's what it is. Weather extremes. You know? So, it is what it is. And the reason why, it wasn't because of nature. Change. No, human beings change nature because of climate change, because of greed and selfishness. That's why. Yeah. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see broadcast programs, podcast programs. Click on that, the drop down. The first thing you see is African Perspectives. Click on that, and I had stopped by Kwaku's house, and we talked, and so we're going to get these programs on. It's been a while, but we're going to get these programs on. So for those who want to catch up or just do some research or whatever it is, we'll put that content on for you, believe me, real soon. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., all times of Eastern times. Today, of course, is Hump Day, Wednesday. Tomorrow, from 8 to 10, Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club from 8 to 10. Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. If you want to use a shortcut to get through those programs, whatever search engine you're going to use, put in babaoshi.net. 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 And there will be programs that are dated and titled, and we're going to do make sure they're updated as well. Thank you, family. I'm going to dispense from the announcements. I'm going to do announcements just maybe once a week, maybe on Wednesdays next week. I did it Monday, so maybe on Wednesdays.
I don't know. Just trying to change up family, you know? Yeah. But I appreciate the opportunity to do whatever I'm, to do what I'm doing. I really do. You know, I appreciate all y'all allowing me to have a couple of hours of your time, you know, for you to listen. Appreciate it very much. Don't take it for granted. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Baba Baruti has two volumes. This is the second volume. And we'll go back to the first until he makes another one. But all good information. Of Daily Revolutionary Thought, July 2nd, alcohol and drugs involved. Alcohol and drugs involve the eternity of the body being invaded by these substances, including one's reproductive cells. When an inebriated individual forces his partner to have sex, resulting in pregnancy, without a doubt, the child will be born alcoholic because he or she was conceived in that state. How many of our eggs and sperm meet under the influence? How many of our children are conceived while their parents were recreationally abusing intoxicants? How many fetuses spend their full term embedded or otherwise high? How many spend 9 months becoming well acquainted with the kind of hangovers that make adults cry and wish they were dead? How many of our futures have exited the birth canal in an intoxicated stupor? Are we in such menticidal states of denial that we actually believe that drugs and alcohol do not infiltrate our reproductive organs? Do we even care? Do we really want to win? Aspiration and vision, which requires that we pass on the best of us so that our children become better frontliners than we are? Can we go back and fetch the spiritual essence of a reality where even scaring a pregnant woman was the equivalent of committing a felon? Affirm, I do not contaminate my or anyone else's body with intoxicants. Affirm, I do not contaminate my or anyone else's body with contaminants. Intoxicants. Intoxication. July 3rd. They have no soul, no substance. Shanshe Love. They have no soul. Therefore, to be anything, they must make everyone else appear less. Having never left Greece, spiritually or culturally, they are the creatures of an ascetic habit, without humanity, without the possibilities of remorse. Of course, with all that they have done and continue to do, warriors could care less if they were human or not. That's Ashe. They possess a sinister, wicked, brutal ugliness that wants those they invade and mercilessly violate to smile at them and sing the joys of their destruction. And let us not follow in line with the determinists who would have us look at the stage as the cause and not the players. It is not the system. It is the ugly, hateful, sterile, frigid, despiritualized mind that created the system in its image. They have been the creators of the eternity of their horrid reality from the beginning. In a nutshell, the European and Europeanized minds see the act of giving up all pursuit of a decent moral life, of giving into their corrupt selves alone, as the only way to finally experience freedom. But today, in imitative human activities which are alleged to lead to inner peace within the canopy they have created, we see the display of being in search of some semblance of tranquility, after having done all in their power to destroy the possibilities of a peaceful, fulfilling, empowered human life for everyone else. We see them in meditative positions and poses, reflecting on what it means to imitate being human. But they can never cleanse nor change. What they have done is them. What they have set in motion is their natural creation. It is a self-reflection, a mirror image, a portrait of their character, a character which can never be Ma'at. Affirm, I have a Ma'atian soul, and recognize those who do not, as well as those who cannot. Affirm, I have a Ma'atian soul, and I recognize those who do not, as well as those who cannot. Ma'at. That's right, family. Ma'at. The Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Today, you know, tomorrow, of course, is the 4th of July. And any day around there, unless it falls on, unless the program falls on that day, we have a program dealing with the 4th of July, you know. And one of the things we always do on the 4th of July, we play an excerpt of Frederick Douglass's address in 1852, I think it is, to a group of women in New York, I think it is. I'm going to go to where I have that at. Yeah. Yep. And play that for us. You know. And then I'm going to read a couple of articles that I have in store for us. Yeah. Yeah, let's see what we have here, fam. Let's see what we have here, fam. Okay. Frederick Douglass. What to the slave? What to the captive? Okay, when I'm reading stuff today and like every day that I do, I you know, I'm always using what I feel are the correct terms, the correct words. You know, I'm not going to use slave. I don't use slave. We're captives. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We always resisted. We always fought. And I use other words too. But we're going to play this piece, What to the Captive is the 4th of July, with James Earl Jones reading it. And this is from Democracy Now! Democracy Now! And you can read the whole thing. It's available.
DemocracyNow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today in this special broadcast, we begin with the words of Frederick Douglass. Born into slavery around 1818, Douglass became a key leader of the abolitionist movement. On July 5th, 1852, in Rochester, New York, he gave one of his most famous speeches, What to the Slave is the 4th of July. He was addressing the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society. This is the actor James Earl Jones reading the historic address during a performance of Howard Zinn's Voices of a People's History of the United States. This is the late, great people's historian, Howard Zinn.
Frederick Douglass, once a slave, became a brilliant and powerful leader of the anti-slavery movement. In 1852, he was asked to speak in celebration of the 4th of July.
Fellow citizens, pardon me and allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I, therefore, called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? I am not included within the pale of this glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought life and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days of the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham. Your boasted liberty, an unholy license. Your national greatness, swelling vanity. Your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless. Your denunciation of tyrants, brass-fronted impudence. Your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery. Your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy, a thin veil to cover up crimes that would disgrace a nation of savages. There's not a nation of the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of these United States at this very hour. At a time like this, scorching irony, not convincing argument, is needed. Oh, had I the ability and could reach the nation's ear, I would today pour forth a stream, a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed, and the crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced.
That was James Earl Jones reading the words of Frederick Douglass.
Democracy Now. I say. Yeah, that particular piece. And of course, there's more to that, but that's what we're going to deal with in terms of that piece. Yeah. Mm-mm-mm. Okay. Let me put this over here. July 4th for American Africans. This is an article that I felt maybe I can just, you know, discover the often overlooked history of July 4th for American Africans and its ongoing relevance in the fight for social justice. Independence Day, colloquially known as the 4th of July, is a federal holiday commemorating the Declaration of Independence in the United States. The Second Continental Congress ratified the Declaration on July 4th, 1776, establishing the United States, the United Snakes of America. July 4th is associated with fireworks, parades, carnivals, fairs, concerts, baseball games, family reunions, political speeches, and ceremonies. In addition, Americans commemorate the day with various other public and private events celebrating this country's history, government, and traditions. Yet, many American Africans remain ambivalent about this day. One reason is of the 56 signers of the Declaration, signees of the Declaration of Independence, 41 owned captives. For example, at age 33, Thomas Jefferson, who became the third president of the United States, owned more than 600 captives during his lifetime, and most, the most of any occupant in the White House. And he's the one that helped write the Declaration of Independence. Oh, the hypocrisy. Having grown up in Virginia around captives, Jefferson, who acquired most of his captives through inheritance, also bought and sold them. In addition, Jefferson fathered two children with one of his captives, Sally Hemings. Remember, they took her to Paris and everything like that. Another reason is American Africans were not considered when the Declaration of Independence was signed. As the signers wrote life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness into the document, the forefathers and foremothers of American Africans, indentured servants or women, did not even have the luxury of being an afterthought. Indeed, Declaration's final version does not reference captivity. A passage condemning captivity was removed before the document was signed because they believed it was going to last forever. Therefore, it's completely understood and understandable why, for American Africans, the significance of July 4th does not carry the weight and importance that it does in the households of American Europeans and those from other ethnic groups. It makes sense that American Africans align themselves more with Juneteenth than they do with this federal holiday. Thankfully, the Declaration of Independence is not the symbol of American democracy that makes American Africans uncomfortable. Many find it offensive, even as they rise and place their right hand over their hearts and sing the Star Spangled Banner at sporting events and other public events. The author, a 34-year-old lawyer named Francis Scott Key, spoke of American African people being a distinct and inferior culture, only supporting the emancipation of enslaved people only if they were immediately shipped to Africa. One original verse reads, "No refuge could save the hireling and the slave from the terror or the flight and the fight or the gloom, and the gloom of the grave." The Star Spangled Banner did not become America's national anthem for a century after it was written. Key went on to serve as district attorney for Washington, D.C., during the administration of Andrew Jackson, the most racist asshole president Andrew Jackson. In this capacity, he further cemented his racist beliefs and behaviors by strictly enforcing codes and laws and prosecuting abolitionists who passed out pamphlets mocking his claim of America as the land of the free and home of the brave. Why are American Africans daily reminded that two of their primary pinnacles of American democracy, the Declaration of Independence and the Star-Spangled Banner, are rooted in centuries-old racism? Why did American Europeans react the way they did when Colin Kaepernick chose to kneel during pregame singing of the national anthem to protest highlight the police brutality against American African people? And why were those Americans so offended by their perception and disrespect to the American flag by Kaepernick for a bent knee? They were not similarly offended by the supporters of Donald J. Trump when they used the same American flag on polls to brutalize U.S. Capitol police officers on January 6, 2021. In Rochester, New York, on July 5, 1852, Frederick Douglass delivered the keynote address at the Independence Day celebration, asking, What to the captive is 4th of July? He noted that nation's fathers were granted. He noted that the nation's fathers were great men for their ideas of freedom. But in doing so, he brings awareness to the hypocrisy of their ideas by the existence of captivity on American soil. In his scathing speech, Douglass also stated, "The 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I moan." Those American Africans who chose not to celebrate the 4th of July should never be viewed or condemned as un-American. Instead, they should be considered authentic Americans, committed to reminding America that it has fallen short of the Declaration of Independence, words of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for all Americans. Only then will the 4th be a federal holiday to celebrate and commemorate all Americans, all American Africans. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And I know there are many people who tomorrow, they preparing today for tomorrow and the parades, the decorations that they're going to put up. And, you know, I remember as a firefighter, I worked usually on the 4th of July. And, you know, I was in a couple of, with the fire engine and a couple of parades and that kind of thing. But I never felt, oh, as a kid, yeah, man, any holiday was always cool. Although I do remember one year when I was a little kid, we had a box and with our food and going to this picnic. And that word is, you know, they said that word is, you know, pick a nigga. That's why, you know, it's not. But anyway, going to a cookout at a park and the box at the bottom came open and the potato salad bowl was busted. Boy, oh boy. I was sad then, and I'm still sad today. I love potato salad. Yeah. So, you know, some of these things, for me, I like to wish brothers and sisters who participate, you know, that they enjoy their families, that they're safe, that they're respectful, that they come together and feel good about what's happening. They don't get so inebriated that they begin to fight and shoot. But we know it happens. It's been happening. This is a longer weekend. Tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Oh, man. Let's look at Chicago. See how many folks get shot, killed in Chicago. Tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But all across this country. The hypocrisy in this country is so pervasive and so deep. All across this country. Europeans. You know, I have such disdain for Urugu. I really do. Such disdain for them and what they have done. The Africans who came up into Europe when Europe was on a decline because Rome had fell, they had lost to the Huns, they kind of decimated them. And so now Europe puts into a medieval or dark age. And the only light in Europe was in the western part of Europe. And once again, Europe is not a continent by anybody's definition. And it's supposedly, and especially because it's not their definition that it is a continent, but it is there. It is there saying that it is. And that's all that needs to be said. I declare it. I say it is. Because I say so. That's what it is. Yeah. So the western part where Spain and Portugal, the Moors or the Africans who followed Islam came out of northern Africa across the Iberian, into the Iberian Peninsula or the Strait of Gibraltar or the Columns of Hercules, whichever one you want to use, into the western part of Spain in from 711 to 1492. 1492 becomes a very serious year. Not only was Columbus setting sail from that western part of Europe to find a route around Africa and around Africa into the Indian Ocean, into India. That was the purpose. But of course, he got caught up in the currents that sweep you westerly coming off the west coast, that whole coastline of Africa. And he came to this hemisphere, you know, 1492. Also, that was the same year that, you know, the Europeans started coming together and they kicked the Moors out, the brothers and sisters that did what they did, bringing light to Europe. And they got rid of the Sephardic Jews. Got rid of the Sephardic Jews. Yeah. And so now they began to develop. And you know, Charlemagne and Martel and all of them, they said, hey, we made war amongst ourselves. And we do. Because we some war-ass people. That's what we do. We may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And they began to go around, as they say, their age of exploration. They began to go around the world, claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. A friend of mine was talking about the movie Apocalypto. And if you haven't seen Apocalypto, you need to see it. I mean, it's subtitled, so you got to read. I know some of you don't want to read, but it's great. It is a great movie, subtitled. So, Apocalypto. And at the end of the movie, what's deep is that Jaguar Paul is the guy that they are trying to get some more of the Mayans. They're trying to get him and trying to capture him. Him and his wife and son and the baby that was being born. And he makes it to the beach, and the two guys that are trying to catch him, they all stop and they look on the horizon. There's a big ship, and then there's a smaller boat coming towards them, coming towards their shore. And that's the end of them. These people who are coming towards your shore, that will be the end of your civilization. That'll be the end of a lot of stuff that was there culturally, because they're going to take it. They're going to stick a flag in and then claim it in the name of Spain, Portugal, England, France, and I could go on. Europeans, Urugu. So if you ask me, and of course you don't need to ask me, what these people have done and what they continue to do, it's a damn shame. Yeah. When they come back from after the break, is another piece I'm going to read for you. And, you know, yeah. Because I think for us, we don't really look at, you know, and analyze and study history. You know, because for some, we believe what Caucasians have said, that we have no history. You know, I if you know me and you listen to this program, you know that I am very fond of Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. John Henry Clark, very fond. You know, and Mama Marimba Ani, that was her jegna. Yeah. And she has a deep fondness for Dr. Clark. Understandable. I used to listen to tapes of Dr. Clark. That southern drawl that he had, I could just listen to him all day long. You know. And he talks, as he talks about the Europeans and what these people have done, he was very clear. He was very clear. They meant us no good. On the continent and all over the world, they meant no good to the people they encountered. Yeah. Their idea was to take. They didn't come to bargain. You know, they didn't come to trade. They came to take. And as he used to, as Dr. Clark used to say, these people were land poor. Their land ain't about jack. Resource poor, very little. And people poor because they were dying. Remember, they had the Black Death for a century or so back in the 1400s or 1300s. So by 1492, that whole thing began to change. And in the 1500s, the century of enlightenment, 15, 16, 1700s, of exploration, going around the world. You know, Marco Polo goes to China, comes back. You know, he goes to China, he comes back. And people think that, rice is Chinese. But he comes back with pasta. Because people think that pasta is Italian. Pasta was Chinese. Rice was African. But people think that rice is Chinese. He came back with pasta. But what he came back with, most importantly, was gunpowder that Chinese used for celebration. He came back with gunpowder to shape and fashion weaponry. They used it for celebration, fireworks, and so forth. To European. That's why I've always said, and always will say, they've always found a better way to kill your ass. Always. I've watched a couple of documentaries on weapons that Europeans, I'm talking about, from way back in the medieval times up to the present, all kinds of ways that. And then, of course, now with technology, still finding better ways to kill you, to eliminate you. Guns that can shoot 5,000 rounds in a minute. Or you can get a bump, what is a bump stock, and put it on your gun, and there it is, it's rapid fire. You're killing a whole bunch of people. Yeah. So, the European, in his mind, he felt that what he was doing, and this is how delusional that they're bringing enlightenment to the world. That everybody else was in the dark until the European came to bring them light with their religion and their knowledge. And I'm not saying that Isaac Newton and Galileo and all these individuals, but what I am saying is that they weren't the fathers and mothers of. They weren't the first. Europeans looked at what other Europeans have done. And some of those Europeans looked at what others had done. Some of them just like, it's like an ancient Kemet. They take the name and put their name on it. How you think Hippocrates became the father of this and of history and science? They put their name on it. They dominate. Yeah. I'm going to get ready to take a break. When we come back from the break, I got another piece I'm going to read. And then, of course, phone lines are always open at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. They're always open. So we're going to, yeah. So I'm hoping, brothers and sisters, that we have some good discussion today on this, the eve of the 4th of July. And to me, you know, we've always involved in ourselves into something that is opposite of what the European has presented. I remember Friday the 13th when they tried to make it a bad one. So we had Friday the 13th get-togethers and break a mirror and walk under a ladder. Yeah, Friday the 13th. Because we understood that the number 13 is not an evil or bad number. It's the number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. It is a good number. But, of course, the whole objective by the Europeans is to scare your ass. Yeah. So, anyway. Okay. All right, family. Let's do this. We're going to take this break. When we come back, there'll be more. You stay with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You wanna die, it's not my turn. To do something to me like jumping a Mercedes on the highway, doing over 80 without music, baby.
Ow! I'll go crazy. Just like music.
Make me call my homie on the phone like there's something new out that got me in the zone. Just that feeling got me. I wish music can adopt me.
Just like music.
Woman got me in the air saying sweet nothings. Make love come out the mouth, no frontin', like all of a sudden.
Just like music.
Taking away your worries and cares. Any problems, music will be right there. Together match, yo, we a perfect pair. Is that true, Marvin?
Yeah, music.
Yo, to get you the bangness, body soul snatcher, universal language, it be the light. So open up, this is it. What the f-?
Just like music.
One fly tune to have black and white vibe in one room. No confrontation, poly all night. It's just a sensation.
Just like music.
Just like music.
ain't over yet. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah. Eric Sermon featuring Marvin Gaye. First cut. Yeah. And then, of course, Al Hudson in One Way, Mr. Groove. Yeah, love it. Hope you enjoyed it. Mr. Groove, won't you come back? Yeah. Today is the 3rd of July. And, of course, tomorrow is the 4th of July. And, all kind of activities and festivities will be happening. One of the things that we got to remind ourselves and understand about this situation is that it ain't about us, and we try. And what about this, that? They're going to do what they're going to do. Here's a piece I'm going to read to you. How white supremacy became a part of American culture. White supremacy. What these Caucasians do, and all the stuff that they do. As the saying goes, is what? It is American as apple pie. Yeah. Yeah. White supremacy is an ideology asserting the inheritance of superiority of white people over non-white people individuals. This is deeply flawed belief system, has its roots in a pseudo-scientific racism, which historically justified atrocities such as our captivity, imperialism, colonialism, and genocide. Today, white supremacy, and you know, believe me, I don't believe in white supremacy, because number one, they ain't white, and they sure in the hell ain't supreme, you know? But I do believe that what they have done ultimately must be dismantled. Today, white supremacy ideologies persist, perpetuating the myth of white racial superiority. Within the educational system in the United States, historians believe the influence of white supremacy began with the education system. Research conducted by the Donald Yakovit of at Monroe C. Gutman Library examined over 3,000 U.S. history textbooks dating from the 1800s to the 1980s. Donald discovered that many of these textbooks either omitted or downplayed the atrocities of captivity, of the captive trade, and other events where marginalized groups were oppressed. For instance, in one textbook titled Exploring the New World, the anti-captivity movement was capriciously absent. Instead, the authors justify the use of captivity to pick cotton by saying, who else could do this work? That's just like, yeah, and from that standpoint, understanding, Not so much of what's happening today in the atmosphere and in the weather of today. Imagine as hot as it is and your ass is down here picking cotton. Only us, only somebody with melanated skin could do that. It's just like an ancient Kemet. Only us with melanated skin could be, you know, building pyramids and temples and tombs. Only us. So the Caucasians co-opting and, of course, changing Kemet to Egypt is a fallacy, is pure bull. For instance, in one textbook, Exploring the New World, okay, I read that already, didn't I? Who else could do this work? Eli Whitney, known for Eli Whitney didn't invent no damn cotton gin. Eli Whitney was drinking gin. Shit. Somebody African, just like all the other inventions that happened. When you go to, there's plenty of documentation, even though a lot of things that we did were co-opted by them because we couldn't go to the patent office. We couldn't get a patent. I think this is one of the case. Was Eli Whitney, known for inventing the cotton gin, was portrayed not for his significant impact on captivity, but rather for the concept of interchangeable parts, which facilitated industrialization, according to Yakovin. Per Learning for Justice, historian Carter G. Woodson. Ah, that's my man, Carter G. Woodson. Carter Godwin Woodson highlighted this dreadful fact in 1933, criticizing the educational system for marginalizing American African students. Woodson noted that American African students were taught to admire European culture while being taught to despise their own African heritage and to feel bad about it. We were made to feel ashamed about it, man. See, when you come up in this system, we had to fight to get when I was in high school. So imagine when I'm in grade school and even in middle school. In high school, we walked out. For example, he noted that classics curriculum, which is based on studies of Latin, German, and French, frequently centers on positioning Europe at the pinnacle of human achievement. Despite ancient Rome's geographical reach into Africa and the Middle East, textbooks often depict ancient Romans as exclusively Caucasian. Even ancient Greco-Roman artifacts originally painted in vibrant colors are commonly presented as white marble in educational materials. Throughout education, curriculum emphasized the superiority of knowledge originating from ancient Greece and Rome. I remember this brother, good friend of mine, he talked about how great the Romans were. I mean, he's learning this in school, and of course this is what, you know, they wanted to throw at you. It's the same thing when we challenged the textbooks and so forth about ancient Greeks and African-centered and Afrocentricity began to take in the fore in the 80s. And there were debates and where Dr. Clark kicked Mary Lefkowitz's ass because her thing was, I've been taught that Greece did this. So no Africans did this. We were not influenced by Africa. We didn't go study at the feet of Africans. No. We did this because we're brilliant. And of course, that was not the case. And so to hell with Mary Lefkowitz. We dusted her ass and Arthur Schlesinger dusted his ass. No. Mm-mm. They didn't. We did. In mathematics classes, for instance, figures like Euclid and Pythagoras received substantial attention, while contributions from civilizations such as Babylon, Kemet, and Arabic Islamic cultures are frequently overlooked. This educational bias perpetuates a narrative that reinforces Eurocentric perspectives and dismisses the diverse intellectual and cultural achievements of non-European societies. No, you ain't never done nothing, and we did everything. Legal institutional frameworks. Over the years, you know, like I said, I don't use white supremacy. I like what I got from Brother Paul. You know, they're not superior. And so came up with, yeah, European Caucasian extremism, because they are extreme. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Now, of course, there is no such thing as race. They created the idea of race. You can even look it up. Look up Johann Blumenbach and Carol Linnaeus, two individuals, German individuals. Johann Blumenbach and Carol Linnaeus, 1500s, 16th century. So it ain't, this ain't no old stuff. This is new. Yep, they're the ones who created race and stratifying. And of course, this is another piece in terms of race, was the Indians. You know, the Indians, not the indigenous people here, but in India, the Indians. Because the Dravidians lived there in that area, and they're melanated. And you still see a lot of melanated people coming out of India. Look at how hot it is. Well, the people who came from the Caucasus Mountains, Caucasians, Caucasus Mountains, moved down into India. And they sought to conquer these people. Then what did they believe? And they took those belief systems and they manipulated and they, you know, yeah, India. In fact, when War of Din Muhammad took over after the passing of Elijah Muhammad, before Farrakhan took over from him and revived and reestablished the Nation of Islam, he moved the people to Orthodox Islam, to Sunni Islam. And there was a book, it was green, some teachings. And there was a section in there called, never forget it, never, the roots of Aryan white racism and diabolical consciousness. Hell of a title, ain't it? The roots of Aryan white racism and diabolical consciousness. And that's what happened. These people established the caste system, stratifying, giving the top position to the lightest all the way to the bottom at the darkest, with the darkest being the most despised, the outcast, the Dravidians, the untouchables. And so, globally today, to this very day, at this very moment, to be dark is something you don't want to be. To be deeply melanated is something that you don't want to be. Yeah. The roots of Aryan white racism and diabolical consciousness. And so around the world, I can think of many countries where from the advertisement, from the television, from pictures and so forth, you would swear there are no dark people in this place. Same as Brazil. There are more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. There are more Africans in Brazil. If you go to Rio, now, the brothers and sisters live in the favelas, the slums of the hills. And the people with wealth, they live in high rise. There's all kind of high rise apartments. So that area that they have, you know, because the poor people live in the hills in the favelas. And on television, you don't see them. If you do see them, they're in the same cliche or stereotypical mode of being maids, of being servants, of being uneducated, and so forth. That's the mindset, family, globally. Globally. European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. And privilege. And you are witnessing privilege as we speak with Donald J. Trump. It is fucking ridiculous that this man, he put those three, and if you remember, he was supposed to not be able to do what he did. He was, when he was president, he was not supposed to, because he was not supposed to get that last Supreme Court nomination in, but because others said, no, Brock, you can't do this. And Brock had more time, almost a year. And they said, no, you can't do that. You can't nominate. In fact, you can go ahead and nominate. We're not going to interview him. We're not going to call for him. They were explicit. They were not going to do it. And because Ruth Bader Ginsburg's ass, she didn't retire when she should have. So Barack could make an appointment. So when she died, it was during Trump. And he already made two appointments. And so he made a third. And made the court 6-3 conservative. And it's going to be that way for a long time. And if he, it shouldn't be a snowball's chance in hell for his ass to win this presidency. It shouldn't be, even though what happened with Biden, you know, and which was very sad, to be honest with you. It really was. It was pathetic, you know. If he in that so-called debate, all he had to do was not mug up. Well, he mugged up. But still, and it's interesting to see how the Democrats are dealing with this, because there are many who are saying, no, you can't do it. And Clyburn is saying, allow Kamala Harris, support her. Stop it. If you don't choose somebody, some other cracker out there, the Democrats will not win. And it's and because now it is set up for that. All of the things that could have possibly happened are not going to happen. It is the election. It'll be the opportunity for either you vote him in or you vote him out. And that's the bottom line. Ain't nothing happening legally. No sentencing, no nothing. Legal and institutional frameworks. Over the years, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege has been entrenched through racist policies. As the American colonies evolved into the independent nation, the ideology of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege became embedded in its legal and institutional frameworks. The U.S. Constitution, while professing ideas of liberty and equality, simultaneously enshrined the dehumanization of Africans through the Three-Fifths Compromise and other provisions that perpetuated captivity and denied rights to non-Caucasian individuals. Even after abolition, captivity, legal segregation, and separation and discrimination persist under Jim Crow laws and black codes. Jim Crow laws were states and local laws enacted in the southern and border states of the United States after Reconstruction. Reconstruction was after the captivity, and it lasted about 10 years. There were many people who were elected to local government, state government, and, of course, U.S. government. Didn't last but 10 years. And once it didn't with Johnson, I mean, they came down hard. Beginning in the late 19th century, the 1800s, and continuing into the middle 20th century, the 1900s, these laws enforced racial segregation in public facilities, transportation, schools, and other aspects of daily life, effectively institutionalizing racial discrimination and European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. The Black Codes were laws enacted in the southern states immediately after the Civil War during Reconstruction. These laws were designed to restrict the freedoms and the rights of American Africans and to ensure a stable and subservient labor force. Black codes varied by state, but typically restricted American Africans' ability to own land, conduct business, freely move about, and to seek employment. They also limited their rights to testify against whites in a court and to vote. You can't testify against Caucasians. European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege was also found expressions in cultural and society institutions. Literature, art, and popular culture often depicted non-Caucasian people as inferior or threatening to Caucasian dominance. The portrayal of Native Americans as savages, American Africans as lazy, subservient, or dangerous, and Asian Americans perpetuate foreigners, reinforce stereotypes, and justify discrimination and practices. Today, while overt manifestations of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege may not be as openly endorsed, its legacy continues to shape American society. Structural inequalities in areas such as education, employment, health care, and criminal justice persist, disproportionately affecting people of color. Incidents of police brutality, hate crimes, and the resurgence of white nationalism and their movements, white nationalism, white supremacy, underscores the ongoing struggle against racial prejudice and inequality. Efforts to dismantle European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege include advocacy for racial justice, reforms in policing and criminal justice, equitable access to education and health care, and the promotion of diversity and inclusion in all aspects of society. Organizations, activists, and communities continue to challenge systematic racism and work toward creating a more just and equitable future for all Americans. Yeah. Hate in America, the many faces. National blinds you. Oh, I'm not going to read this. I'm going to go to the, ain't got time. ain't got time to read this bull. But it's something good, though. Catch you next time, family. Let me get to the phone lines. You're down 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And family. Hey, Brother Irv. Good afternoon. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Baba Oshi. Thank you for taking my call.
Right on.
Boy, you hit on so many things, and I listen to when you talk. But you know, Baba Oshi, if you plant an ugly seed, you're gonna get an ugly tree.
That's for sure.
If you start,
that's for sure.
if you start 400 years ago, beating somebody over the back, and then telling them to go out and work, and then have some children. Then they beat their children. At some point,
right.
They don't have to beat them anymore. Mm-hmm. Then their children become subservient.
Yes.
And then their children's children be. Now we're calling ourselves. Oh, go ahead, you old black N-word. You calling yourself black N-word. And so, this is where we are now, Baba Oshi. And when you see the oppressor moving the way they're moving, where they're turning on each other and. They got a felon running for president, and before they would, these white folks would act as if they didn't do things wrong. You know, I never saw Lucy and her husband get in the same bed on TV. Right. Let alone have they had children. Come on now, they were even fronting like they weren't homosexuals and they weren't deviants and they weren't doing anything wrong. They were just following God's word. Billy Graham took so much money from people, and I saw black folks following this white man. Talking about his white Jesus with his straight hair. So my point is not to say that it about their religion. It's about how these white folks were moving. But now they're moving different. They pulled the covers back. They turned the light on. They want you to see what they're doing. And they've drawn the line in the sand. It's us against y'all. Mm-hmm. And if you American Africans don't come on and get on board with us and our foolishness, you become an enemy of mine. And that's why when you look at these Trump rallies and see these American Africans in the crowd up front, and make sure that you see them.
Exactly.
You have to. For me, Baba Oshi, I just want to put them. I want people to see them. I want young American Africans to see these people. And actually, let's do interviews with those people on black media. Why don't they come and sit down and have a talk with other American Africans and let me see what drew you to this foolishness, because there's nothing right in this. And what you will find, Baba Oshi, is that they have a gap in between their knowledge of history. It's a gap. It has to be, because if you just know from slave ship to Plymouth Rock to now, you miss a 200,000 years worth of Ethiopian Bible. Well, what's that? That's Christianity. Well, they couldn't have had Christianity until white folks gave it to them. No, they're the ones that gave it to the white folks. See, and what you don't understand is, not you, but people tend not to understand, is that when you write the history, it's your history. I'm not going to put myself in a bed. When I tell you about my career in the fire department, Baba Oshi, man, I was damn near fire chief. Man, I wasn't no fire chief. Let me tell
you. Let you tell them.
Man, I'm saving.
That's right.
I'm saving babies. I'm jumping out of windows. Yep, I had the fire engine on two wheels one time going around the corner, and everybody held on. I didn't even drop my sub sandwich, you know. But in reality, none of that happened. Most police don't even pull their gun in their whole career. So when you think white folks going to tell you about this history in Africa, they discovered everything. They invented everything. As a matter of fact, they trying to make you think that white aliens came down and built the pyramids. Let them tell it. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear to the world we live in, and how when you back someone into a corner, or when they start to deteriorate, when their numbers start to go down, they get scared. Mm-hmm. And what you're looking at now, when you look at Arugu, is you're looking at a scared person. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're afraid.
Yes.
And when you're afraid, especially of something you don't understand, you start to fight. Mm-hmm. And you fight with your verbal, you fight with your food, you fight with your water, you weaponize food. And white folks have been doing this forever. To destabilize a government, you weaponize their food, and you do what the Russians do. They starve you to death. The Bolsheviks used to starve people to death. And that's what's going on now, because these are brethren. They don't learn. They didn't just invent how to fight. They learned it from their brethren. You know, but see, we are the ones that just won't go away. These Africans, man, why ain't y'all gone? Because we need your resources. We need your country. We need y'all gone. You need to come over to America and get one of these black jobs. You know, working as a, on the train.
These black jobs.
Black, well, that's what he said.
Yeah,
but, you know, man. You know, like the ones that work at Mar-a-Lago, you know, serving and cutting the grass and doing, cleaning, you know, sir, you need anything, sir? You know, we got you, sir. But so my point, and then the point is, I never understood why the NAACP would always point out all they which they thought were the good things that blacks were doing, you know, playing real good in baseball or doing inventing something. I never knew that, but when you're trying to assimilate to someone, you have to make them think that you can do what they do as good as them. And I believe we never should have done that. I said the assimilation piece was the piece that got our children running around here putting hair in their head and getting their nails done with all the makeup on, trying to look like some white woman with a tan. That was the assimilation made us gravitate to that. We don't need that. We need to be who we are. As a matter of fact, if you knew your history, these people are trying to be like you. What's that girl, Bo Derek? She going to have braids in her hair. Here she whiter than a can of milk. And she, oh, those braids are beautiful. But when the black woman got it, yo, nappy hair. What that nappy hair she got on her head? You know, so my point is, whoever tells the story is going to put themselves in a good light. And we can't be like that, because the reality is, the only reason that we're here, Baba Oshie, is because we believe in the truth and we know where we fit in this universe. And the Most High has kept us here for a reason. God doesn't just do things haphazardly. There's a reason for all this, and we'll find out when we go on the other side with the ancestors. But for now, I believe the Most High knows where we're supposed to be and what we're going to do. And history is like Dr. Henry Clark said, it's a clock that tells us where we are and where we need to be. So, Baba Oshie, thanks for letting me speak my mind. I appreciate it, bro. Right, I'm listening,
brother.
Man.
Right on, brother. Appreciate you, dear brother.
Yes,
peace.
Sir. We're going to talk.
Sister Abia, how are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, doing blessed. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, enjoying your program, and I was just agreeing with you and Brother Herb, you know, about this fallacy of this 4th of July and how atrocious, and you know, we have the factor, or the motivating factor for the Yorubas is that they are scared because of the annihilation that's inevitable being cast upon them as we just continue to grow and thrive. But the other element, not just because they're scared, also their nature is diabolic. You know, so, I mean, they're scared, but they Yorubu and they're diabolic. So that was just, you know, an important factor with it. And, you know, and assimilation, I agree with Irv, it's been very bad, all the integration thing. And, you know, you were speaking earlier about Biden was so bad when he had the speech that he had, his the debate.
Right, at debate.
But I didn't think he was that bad. I think he's like he always is, and he did make some comebacks.
Yeah, well,
but it's just,
he made two bad gaffes that I knew that there would be amplified. I knew there would be really hard to pick on him. Because, I mean, they were waiting for either him or Trump to make some gap that they could just really pound. And, of course, once he did that, it was pretty much over. And then he, you know, kind of lost his way and said, said
you know,
something.
And the media amplifies that. And it seems like the media, you know, they're in cahoots with Trumpism.
You think so?
For Trump. Yeah, the media is in cahoots because they call him for Trump to resign, to get out. They didn't, with this other man, they're calling for Biden to resign.
Right, exactly.
And to jump out.
Exactly.
But where was the call for Trump? Because he did far more atrocities. He got his 32 convictions, and he accused of and also
well the thing is this
rape,
sister.
Raping women, what I mean, what is this.
That's the thing. The thing is this, sister. Thing is this. I don't, as bad as all of those things you just mentioned, and there's still more. The bottom line is the election. He is going to have the opportunity to be voted in or not voted in. And so for those who are into the voting situation, which I'm not, you're going to need to cast your ballots. And you're going to need to cast your ballots, not for some third party, not for Mickey Mouse, for none of that shit. You're going to have to cast your ballots clearly for either Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Joe Biden is not going to be replaced. I know there's some real strong Democrats who have been meeting and really want to tell Joe Biden, listen, man, no. And I don't even know some of these Democrats they want to put up there at this late date. So my contention is, and they shown a hell, like Clyburn from South Carolina talking about, we need to get, then let's do this. Let's get behind Kamala Harris.
I haven't heard him say that, though.
Trump.
And I've been hearing him. I mean, not Trump. Biden. He's
right.
For Biden. I haven't heard him say.
Well, let me, then please let me tell you. Yes, he has.
It was on the news.
No, he said this a couple of days ago, Sister Abia, that we need to get behind Kamala Harris then. If you don't want Biden and then the next Democrat, as far as he's concerned, because that's what it would be if that's what it would be if Joe Biden passed, if he transitioned. Kamala Harris would automatically step up and be the president. Mm-hmm. And so in this situation, he's saying then she should be the one that the Democrats get behind and support her and vote for her for president. I don't think that's going to happen. No, not if he dies. Period.
What news was that on? I'm curious.
That was on the news. That was on the national news.
Because I'll be listening to the news. I ain't heard that.
I'll tell you this. I don't know.
Promoting Biden.
I would say this. Maybe you can find it if you go online and Google it. And, you know, what did Clyburn say about supporting Kamala Harris for president? Something like that. And it's there. Believe me, I wouldn't be saying.
Yeah, I have heard some things about people saying that if Biden leaves, then why aren't they not supporting Kamala?
And you know, and you know why?
They're racist and things like that.
And you know why?
Yeah, because they're racist, and then you know she's African.
And so she doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of beating anybody for president, let alone Donald Trump. So, no, she is not going to be the nominee. Huh?
Yeah, I guess she would be next in line.
Yeah.
Supposedly, but
if she would be next.
They're just showing the racism of the whole thing about how they, you know, wouldn't have her.
Oh, no, they're not going to put her up in that position. No. And so the Caucasians, men and women, because there are some women, too, that I haven't seen or heard about any American African. They're trying to put up in that position. And if they did, it would probably more than likely be her, you know. But
Do you think they're not trying to put up anybody for Trump? It's just racism. I think they all in cahoots. Like, it's a conspiracy in the game. Because them Democrats and the Republicans,
because the Republicans, number one, he has co-opted them. They're scared of him. He is the nominee. How can a person who cannot get a job, he's a felon. He can't get a job as a police officer. He can't do shit.
Right, but he could be the president of the United States.
There it is. That's how crazy this is. This is some insane stuff.
You're saying they're scared. Yeah, that's a factor. But I think they also just as corrupt as him.
And they are.
They're not getting no pressure. They're scared. They may be scared, but they want the same thing. They just as corrupt and diabolic as him. So that's just what it is. They corrupt.
And so the bottom line is going to be Biden won by 7 million, 8 million votes.
He did. He won by a lot.
Yeah. And so he's going to need all those. And I know many of those votes went away from him because of what he has done all the time of being president, particularly in this this European Jew thing in Israel and their support for Israel.
Yeah, it's just an abomination.
So it's going to be interesting, you know. November will be here shortly, you know.
Well, yeah, because I hear what you're saying, too. And that is like an elephant in the room because they get on, they don't want to say that he lost so many votes because mm-hmm. what he did in Gaza. They call it like he's Genocide Joe. And he lies and he's complicit with just, you know, what you see all the killing the women, the babies, the churches, the schools. You know, so he just blatant with it. And then he lies and says he's not going to give more money, but he's always siding with them with all the genocidal maneuvers they do.
Well, like, let me say this. Early on in his political career, he sided with a lot of these assholes, you know.
Yeah.
He really did, you know. But when Barack picked him as a running mate, he had already had become liberal in his leanings and thinking, you know. And so he was a different person then. And so, you know.
I think he stayed the same.
Let me say it this way. From a public persona,
political.
Right,
yeah.
That happened. Behind closed doors, who knows? And you're right. I agree with you on that point. But but because of the persona that he wanted now to project as opposed to 30, 40, 50 years ago, because that's how long he's been in, you know.
Right.
With Lester Maddox and what was the other, Strom Thurmond, you know. He was siding with
him.
Who's that?
Jesse Helms.
Oh, Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms of North Carolina. Biden sided with all these reactionary racist ass Caucasians. There's no doubt about it, and he can't deny it. You know,
right? Because he's one of them.
Yeah.
But you know, there's one other last thing. How we try to have this to our advantage as Africans here in the United States, and with this, Trump needs the African vote, and so it shouldn't be that just out of benevolence.
Trump doesn't need it.
Let me finish. Yeah, it's not that we should just, you know, vote for him because he needs our vote and we all need to vote. But he needs to do something. We need reparations now. And then the black farmers need their money. George Floyd, police action, he should put that in. And then another major thing that they're doing a call for, you know, it's a national call for the Africans there, for us Africans here, is the Justice for Greenwood. They have a justicefewood.com.
Tulsa?
And if you want our vote.
Sister Habib.
You implement it now. Don't say you promise going to do it later when you get in.
Sister Habib, Justice for what? Greenwood in Tulsa?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for these people to get their money, the sisters to get their reparations.
Okay, because I mean, you know, now there's only two left. There's only two left,
so let them two get it. He needs to do it.
And so you're saying that Joe Biden should definitely be doing this?
Yes, yeah. He can do it. He has the authority. He needs an ability.
Or you're saying Donald Trump, and you also said Donald. You also said Donald Trump should be doing this.
It's a movement. It's up on the website. They're telling us how they want our support. They want us to, you know, support and send letters and do the protests and write-ins. And make these demands on him. Because if he wants to get our vote, he needs to do something like that. Do what we need, what we want, what we demanding.
Well, Donald Trump, let me say this to you.
He did something for the so-called immigrants. He passed the DACA for them recently.
Donald Trump is not going to do a damn thing. He just wants us to vote for him.
Yeah, we're talking about Biden to get this vote. I'm talking about Biden to get this vote in November 2024.
Well,
He needs to do something. We couldn't just go vote for him. I mean, it's
well, Biden,
do something now for us.
Biden's best
if
move.
If you want to vote. Otherwise, you're just like, you know, Lucifer
yeah.
the devil.
Well, Biden's face. Best move was to pick Kamala Harris as vice president. Sisters went wild.
Okay.
Sisters
mm-hmm.
went wild. And the American African,
again.
The American African female vote was, I mean, 90-some percent. Voted
yeah, 97,
for Biden.
98.
Yeah, 90, exactly.
So
it was high.
Do something again, man.
Well, I don't know what that could be.
Yeah, I just said some things he could do. He could help those black farmers right now. The black farmers, you're aware of the plight of the black farmers, and they're not getting their money and their millions, and he could make sure they had their money.
Mm-hmm.
He could do one of his declarations that we're going to do the George Floyd policing act.
Mm-hmm.
And just a green one, just like I said.
Yeah. Okay.
Do reparations now. He could do something. He do something bold. Don't just sit up there like a little sissy like he is most of the time. Do something.
Okay, sister.
My sister, before you leave, I just want to say to you, we as American Africans, we get symbolism. Didn't you get a day off for Juneteenth? What are you talking? You think you're gonna get a check? We these people, these Caucasians, I'm not surprised at anything that these Caucasians do.
That's right.
And you should not be either, because their history proves them out. They have never ever done anything. Symbolism is what they do for black people, but other groups, the LGBT, the Asians,
yeah, put in laws for them so they could get married.
They get checks. They get. This ain't about.
But they demanded it too. We need to put a demand for some things we want. We need to put in a demand, and they're at a vulnerable point right now where we get some of our laws put in.
But when you don't have American,
not a promise from him. Not saying, well, later when I get in, you do it damn right now.
And see, what's your left? What is our leverage? If we ain't gonna vote, it doesn't matter. Our vote.
Yeah, that's
our
leverage. We
matter.
Will vote for you if you do this now. If you don't vote for us, don't come here begging for our vote. If you're not doing it, that's the leverage.
And then in the parties, when you have people like Clyburn in there with everything but bent over for Biden, no matter what
he
does,
bent over. You're right. Yeah.
You can't get anything done. He's just trying to have a fish
fry. We're not going to have a defeatist that we're not position that we can't get nothing done. There's a movement right now. This is when you have Biden against his back against the wall.
On
if
the
you just
roof.
Want to just stay a sissy and don't want to do nothing, stand up and do this now. Or you ain't getting our vote. Don't come talking about it. I mean, you done already did all kind of abhorrent things, like what you're doing with Gaza, all your genocide stuff. You do this for us. You know,
okay.
I think he gave the Mexican
let me say this.
Just recently. Yeah.
Now, the point is this.
Demand it. We can't just sit down and be no
now,
demand.
There's not. Now, the point is this, Sister Habia. The bottom line is either you vote for Biden and continue on with what he has been trying to do, the things that he's
done. No, I don't care about what he's damn trying.
I know.
Vote for him if he does something now. Now.
Or.
No.
Or.
I ain't
Trump
vote for your ass if you don't do nothing now.
Well,
and it's
Trump,
a movement of people that, they, you know, I mean, it's a rage going on. You know, I've been, do something. I mean, like, the brother was on, I think, what show was he on? He was with Roland Martin. He had a powerful cry for this. Biden, if you don't do this for this Greenwood, what would the Greenwood cry out that we have, then we're not voting for you. It's a
okay.
movement, and I support that.
Let me get this brother in who's been waiting. Brother Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you all?
I'm doing well,
good,
brother.
Good.
We've been fighting ever since we've been here.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had some divisions. It's not, you know, look, people like we are not doing anything. We've been fighting ever since we've been here.
That's right.
That's how we got out of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we got out of Jim Crowism.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It's not the matter of us, you know, not fighting or coming together, making demands. We have some divisions within our ranks, and that is the major problem. You know, we have to come together. And like I say before all the time, it's not necessary that we agree with one another. It's not necessary that we necessarily like everyone.
Right.
You're going to find that. But we have to be unified in what is best for our race and especially our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And that is the key. The reason why these other groups are moving ahead, you look at the Chinese and the gays and all that, they come together, they have an agenda. Of course, Europeans being gay, that's part of their culture. Mm-hmm. So let's get that straight.
Right.
They've always done that. But the point that I'm trying to make, and then I'm going to get off, is that it's unity that will overcome all that's these right. other things that we're talking about.
And you're right, brother.
I agree. Continue to listen to you.
All right, Brother Kevin. Thank you, my brother. Peace to you. Yeah, Brother Kevin, of course, he lived in Tulsa.
And oh, wow.
He lived in Tulsa. Now he's in Houston. And I tell you, he's right. You know, the bottom line is Africans, if we come together and have some kind of functional unity that, you know, not in being lockstep and uniform, but no, we agree on some things and we're going to work towards, because we know that if we agree on this and work towards this, this can be achieved. That can be achieved, you know. But right now, because we're so fragmented and we're all over the goddamn place, nothing can be done.
Call for unity.
Yep.
Call for unity and come together with our demands and let's build things together too. But, you know, because we can't even get people to say, well, you know, I mean, we can get people to move together and make our demands and do all our buildings, et cetera.
Okay.
So I believe in that.
Yeah. Okay, well, my annual 4th of July program is about to come to an end. But, you know, so whatever you do tomorrow, be safe. I hope you have an opportunity to be with family. And I hope you guys have a great time and is safe, you know, that you don't get so damn drunk that you start fighting and pull out the gun and start shooting up the place. But I say to you, you know, when you look at Chicago and other major cities across this country tomorrow, and now you're talking about Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, when you come up on Monday, man, there's going to be a number of us who ain't going to be able to make it out of this weekend. And that's sad.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. So.
That's right.
Yeah, well, the whole day is an abomination. So
Of course it is. And then they're going to give you this illegal, well, they call it legal, the alcohol, and most people don't even know the history of alcohol or what exactly it's doing to you. And if they knew the history of it, they wouldn't put it in their body.
Yeah.
But by the time you find out about what you're doing to yourself and educate yourself, you're already addicted.
It's
a hell of an addictor. It's a hell of an addictor, just like the sugar. Because if you think people ain't going to eat sugar, you lost your mind.
Yeah.
That's what we just have a cookout.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. To celebrate 1776 when you was a slave, or at least they were trying to make you into a slave. You was in the slave process. So what you supposed to be, Crispus Attucks? I'm just saying.
Yeah. Right? Hey. All right, family, I got to go. Got to make a run.
A beep of a hoodie, family.
All right, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. See you on Friday, family. Be safe tomorrow. All right.
Great show.